So this morning, November 14th, we're going to go to the book of Judges. Now, last week, we looked at overcoming fear. And the most important fear to overcome is when you're afraid to do what God tells you to do. And there's some people that are afraid, because God will tell you to do things that might not make sense from a financial point of view, or from an emotional point of view, or from a logical point of view. But God's thoughts are higher than man's thoughts, right? And we might not always understand why God would have us do something, but his reasons are always valid, whether we know what they are or not. Sometimes you don't understand fully until after you do it. But if you're afraid to do it, what should you do? Figure out something else, right? No, you do it anyway. You can ask God to help you to not be afraid. You can ask God to help you to move ahead when you feel like you can't. In the book of Judges, we have an example of a fellow named Gideon, who was asked to take on a big job that he didn't think he was qualified or able to handle. And he needed a lot of help. He was just scared to death to do it, but God did help him. So we're going to start in the beginning of chapter 6, and it gives the background here. It says, "And the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord." Now, if you're familiar with the book of Judges, there was a pattern. Joshua was the first of the judges, and he led people to victory in battle. God had them enter the promised land and told them to expel everybody else that was living there. And they did that to a point, but then after Joshua died, they stopped fighting. They made agreements with people. Okay, we're going to let you stay, but you have to pay us taxes. Call it tributaries. And there were some that they were too strong for them. They couldn't drive them out. And God sent a prophet to him and said, "Why have you not done what I told you to do? I told you to drive everybody out of the land. I have given you this land. I swore it to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And you have not done what I've told you to do. So going forward, these people that you allow to remain in the land, they're going to be pricks in your eyes and thorns in your sides." And then you have a generation that followed that they didn't really know God and his power firsthand. They could read about it, but they didn't have the experience of it. And they started looking around at the people that were living there and letting their kids marry their kids and started worshiping their gods, which is why God wanted these people out of the land. It would keep the people from worshiping him only. They would worship gods, and then one would do it, then another, and then suddenly the whole nation is worshiping other gods. And then God said, "Okay, you're praying to them, let them help you. I'm not going to help you." And they would get overtaken by another nation. And then they would cry to God after a while, and God would raise up someone to help them. So this had already happened several times. They had a 40-year stretch where they had peace, but during that 40 years, what happens? The older people die, new people rise up and say, "Hey, I wonder what gods these other people are worshiping." Or, "That girl's cute, can I marry her?" And she says, "Well, you can marry me, but you have to go to church with me." You know, we worship Baal, and we have ceremonies and things like that, and that's what happened. So verse 1 of chapter 6, God delivered them into the hand of Midian. The Midianites were another nation. And for a period of 7 years, the Midianites were on top and were running the show. And the hand of Midian prevailed against Israel. And because of the Midianites, the children of Israel made them the dens which are in the mountains and caves and strongholds. They went into hiding. And so it was when Israel had sown or planted their crops that the Midianites came up, and the Amalekites, which were longtime enemies of Israel, and the children of the east, even they came up against them, and they encamped against them and destroyed the increase of the earth till they had come unto Gaza, which is the Philistine territory, and left no sustenance for Israel, neither sheep nor ox nor ass. So all their crops were taken. Confiscated, all their animals were confiscated. The only ones they had were the ones that they could hide within their caves. And, you know, so grab a sheep, grab a cow, make sure nobody sees it, because if if it's out in the open, they'll be taken away. Verse 5, and they came up with their cattle and their tents, and they came as grasshoppers for multitude, for both they and their camels were without number, and they entered into the land to destroy it. And Israel was greatly impoverished because of the Midianites, and the children of Israel cried unto the Lord, after putting up with this for 7 years. And it came to pass, when the children of Israel cried unto the Lord because of the Midianites, that the Lord sent a prophet unto the children of Israel, which said unto them, Thus saith the Lord God of Israel, I brought you up from Egypt, and brought you forth out of the house of bondage, and I delivered you out of the hand of the Egyptians, and out of the hand of all that oppressed you, and drave them out from before you, and gave you their land. And I said unto you, I am the Lord your God. Fear not the gods of the Amorites. It means don't worship them. Don't fear them. Don't fear the gods of the Amorites in whose land ye dwell, but you have not obeyed my voice. Now, did that prophet give him any comfort? Did he say, I'm going to help you now? Yeah. He said, no. You have not obeyed my voice. Now, God has the memory of everything that's happened, right? The people that were living there, unless they were reading the scriptures, they wouldn't even have known about what these things, except their grandparents might have told them. Yeah, years ago, God brought us out of Egypt. This is at least a couple of hundred years after that it happened. And they had to tell the kids these stories and all the miracles that God did, part of the Red Sea. And they're probably wondering, I wonder why we're not seeing that stuff nowadays. Well, they're not worshiping God anymore. He's not doing that stuff for them. But they did cry to God, and God sent a prophet. Doesn't even give the prophet's name, but it says what he said. And then God does something. Verse 11, there came an angel of the Lord and sat under an oak, which was an Ophrah, that pertained unto Joash the Abiezrite. And his son Gideon threshed wheat by the winepress to hide it from the Midianites. Normally they would thresh wheat at the top of a hill where the wind would blow the chaff away. But he had to do it in a low place where they would trample out the wine, like Lucy and Ethel, you know, to hide it from the Midianites. And the angel of the Lord appeared unto him and said unto him, The Lord is with thee, thou mighty man of valor. Gideon said unto him, Oh, my Lord, if the Lord be with us, why then is all this befallen us? And where be all his miracles, which our fathers told us of, saying, Did not the Lord bring us up from Egypt? But now the Lord hath forsaken us and delivered us into the hands of the Midianites. And the Lord, that's God, looked upon him and said, Go in this thy might. God is saying it by way of an angel, okay? The angel is speaking for God. God's looking, but God has the angel deliver these words, okay? The Lord looked upon him and said, Go in this thy might, and thou shalt save Israel from the hand of the Midianites. Have not I sent thee? And he, Gideon, said unto him, Oh, my Lord, did you say I'm going to? Me? Gideon? Wherewith shall I save Israel? Behold, my family is poor in Manasseh, and I'm the least in my father's house. I don't have any credentials or qualifications. Who's going to even listen to me? And the Lord said unto him, Surely I will be with thee, and thou shalt smite the Midianites as one man. Even though there might be tens of thousands, you're gonna kill them as if you're just killing one man. And he said unto him, If now I have found grace in thy sight, show me a sign that thou talkest with me, that I'm not just imagining this. Depart not hence, I pray thee. So he's talking to the angel still, who looks like a man. You know, they didn't have wings, like tucked underneath. They would stick out from the bottom every now and then. They just look like a man. So don't leave. Depart not hence, I pray thee, until I come unto thee and bring forth my present and set it before thee. And he said, I will tarry until thou come again. So he listened to him. And Gideon went in and made ready a kid, a little goat, and unleavened cakes of an ephah of flour. The flesh he put in a basket, put the broth in a pot, and he brought it out unto him under the oak and presented it. And the angel of God said unto him, Take the flesh and the unleavened cakes and lay them upon this rock and pour out the broth. And he did so. And the angel of the Lord put forth the end of the staff, the big stick that was in his hand, and touched the flesh and the unleavened cakes, and there rose up fire out of the rock. That normally doesn't happen. Rocks are not flammable, right? But there rose up fire out of the rock and consumed the flesh and the unleavened cakes. Then the angel of the Lord departed out of his sight. He disappeared. And when Gideon perceived that he was an angel of the Lord, up to this point he didn't know. He just saw that it was a guy that was speaking for God, but this isn't a spirit messenger. When Gideon perceived that he was an angel of the Lord, Gideon said, "Alas, O Lord God, for because I have seen an angel of the Lord face to face." And the Lord said unto him, "Peace be unto thee, fear not, thou shalt not die." Because people thought back then that if they would see an actual angel of God, that they would die. If you read about Samson, an angel appeared unto them and thought the same thing and had to be calmed down. That's why angels would say, "Fear not, don't be afraid. It's okay, yeah, I'm an angel, but you're going to be all right." But at this point, the angel had left, so God is speaking to him directly now. So Gideon has the Spirit of God upon him, so God can talk with him, you see? And he told him, "You're not going to die." Then Gideon built an altar there unto the Lord, that's God, and called it Jehovah Shalom, that's the Lord our peace. Mm-hmm. Unto this day it is in Ophrah of the Abiezrites, at least at the time that this was written, that altar was still there. And it came to pass the same night that the Lord said unto him, "Take thy father's young bullock, even the second bullock of 7 years old, and throw down the altar of Baal that thy father hath, and cut down the grove," that's the group of trees that is by it, "and build an altar unto the Lord thy God upon the top of this rock in the ordered place, and take the second bullock and offer a burnt sacrifice with the wood of the grove which thou shalt cut down." Then Gideon took 10 men of his servants and did as the Lord had said unto him. And so it was because he feared his father's household and the men of the city that he could not do it by day, that he did it by night. He was afraid of the people. But he still did it, which is good, right? God didn't say he had to do it in the daytime. He just said, do it. So he did it at night. And when the men of the city arose early in the morning, behold, the altar of Baal was cast down, and the grove was cut down that was by it, and the second bullock was offered upon the altar that was built. And they said one to another, "Who hath done this thing?" And when they inquired and asked, they said, "Gideon, the son of Joash, hath done this thing." Then the men of the city said unto Joash, Gideon's father, "Bring out thy son that he may die, because he hath cast down the altar of Baal, and because he hath cut down the grove that was by it." Kind of tells you how bad it was there, that they considered really Baal a legitimate god to worship and was going to put to death someone who cut down his altar and image. And Joash said unto all that stood against him, "Will ye plead for Baal? Will ye save him?" Are you going to save Baal? If he were really God, you wouldn't have to save him. He would take care of this himself, right? "He that will plead for him, let him be put to death whilst it is yet morning. If he be a god, let him plead for himself, because one hath cast down his altar." Because if someone had done that to God's altar, God would be able to zap him, right? So if Baal was really a god, well, let Baal zap him. Let Baal defend himself. You don't have to do that for him. Shows you that Joash was really not into the Baal worship, even though he had an altar of Baal in his yard. He realized, we're doing this because everybody else is doing it. And you get in trouble if you don't, but at least Joash is now standing up for his son and for God. Then, verse 33, all the Midianites and the Amalekites and the children of the east were gathered together and went over and pitched in the valley of Jezreel. But the Spirit of the Lord came upon Gideon. It means God's giving him information and instruction and ability to do what he's saying. And he blew a trumpet. Means he's calling the army of Israel together when he's doing this. And Abiezer was gathered after him, all the people in that city of Abiezer. And he sent messengers throughout all Manasseh, that's one of the tribes of Israel, who also was gathered after him. And he sent messengers unto Asher, and unto Zebulun, and unto Naphtali. These are other tribes of Israel. and they came up to meet him. And Gideon said unto God, If thou wilt save Israel by mine hand, as thou hast said, behold, I will put a fleece of wool in the floor. And if the dew be on the fleece only, and it be dry upon all the earth beside, then shall I know that thou wilt save Israel by mine hand, as thou hast said. Now, he already had the word of God, right? God already told him, but yet he wants some confirmation. And I can understand that, because this is not just for himself. He has thousands of other people that are risking their lives to fight against the Midianites and these other armies that are bigger than they are. He's saying, God, if this is for real, I'm going to ask you to do this so that I can have concrete evidence that you have spoken to me. I'm going to do this fleece thing, and everybody's going to see it, and I'm going to tell them that I've done this so that they will have the confidence, and I will have the confidence that you're going to do what you said, that I'm just not hallucinating and coming up with these things. Verse 38, and it was so, for he rose up early in the morrow and thrust the fleece together and wringed the dew out of the fleece a bowl full of water. And Gideon said unto God, Let not thine anger be hot against me, and I will speak but this once. Let me prove, I pray thee, but this once with the fleece only. Let it now be dry only upon the fleece, and upon all the ground let there be dew. Just to make sure it was not a coincidence. And God did so that night, for it was dry upon the fleece only, and there was dew on all the ground. It was very kind of God to do that, wasn't it? This wasn't God's idea. But he asked God to do this because he wanted to do the will of God, and he wanted to overcome his fear of doing it. And God helped him. Verse 1 of chapter 7, then Jerubbaal, who is Gideon, remember he was called Jerubbaal because of what his father said, will Baal plead for himself, so he got this nickname, but his real name is Gideon. And all the people that were with him rose up early and pitched beside the well of Harod, so that the host of the Midianites were on the north side of them by the hill of Moreh in the valley. And the Lord said unto Gideon, The people that are with thee are too many for me to give the Midianites into their hands, lest Israel vaunt themselves against me, saying, Mine own hand hath saved me. See, we want to make this so obvious that it was God's doing a miracle to win this battle. So God's telling Gideon what to do now, okay? God knows the hearts of the people, and he knows what the result's going to be. He said, You have too many people. Verse 3, Now therefore go to proclaim in the ears of the people, saying, Whosoever is fearful and afraid, let him return and depart early from Mount Gilead. And there returned of the people 22,000, and there remained 10,000. So they started out with how many? 32,000, right? Now they should have done this anyway according to the law. In the law it says that whenever there would be a battle, that the high priest would say, If anybody is afraid, go home, because they didn't want any cowards fighting in the battle. Because otherwise, if someone was afraid and the enemy would come and they start panicking and retreating, then that would influence others to also be afraid. So if you're afraid, don't come. You'll be labeled as a coward.
But
we would rather not have you fighting with us, okay? So, and then a couple of guys might leave. In this case, two-thirds of the army left. 22,000 out of 32,000 say, we're cowards. All as conscientious objectors, but no, we're afraid. So they went home. There remained 10,000. And the Lord said unto Gideon, The people are yet too many. Bring them down unto the water, and I will try them for thee there. And it shall be that of whom I say unto thee, This shall go with thee, the same shall go with thee, and of whomsoever I say unto thee, This shall not go with thee, the same shall not go. So he brought down the people unto the water, and the Lord said unto Gideon, Every one that lappeth of the water with his tongue as a dog lappeth, thou shalt set by himself. Likewise, every one that boweth down upon his knees to drink. So there'd be some guys that would take a handful of water and slurp it like a dog would, and some that would get down on their knees and drink it bowing down. and the number of them that lapped, putting their hand to their mouth, were 300 men out of 10,000. But all the rest of the people bowed down upon their knees to drink water. And the Lord said unto Gideon, by the 300 men that lapped will I save you, and deliver the Midianites into thine hand, and let all the other people go, every man unto his place. So he had to stand up and say, all you 9,700 men who were not afraid and willing to fight, you must go home. And you 300, come with me. So the people took victuals. It's spelled victuals, but it's supposed to be pronounced victuals. That means provisions, food to eat and stuff, in their hand, and their trumpets, which would be like ram's horns, not the brass kind. And he sent all the rest of Israel, every man, unto his tent, and retained those 300 men, and the host of Midian, means the army of the Midianites, was beneath him in the valley. And it came to pass the same night that the Lord said unto him, arise, get thee down unto the host, for I have delivered it into thine hand. And whenever God puts in the past tense something that's still future, that means it's absolutely promised and sure to happen. Now, verse 10, this is, again, very kind of God. But if thou fear to go down, because he knew Gideon very well, he knows the hearts of people. He's the man for the job, but he's still feeling a little anxiety, you know. But if thou fear to go down, go thou with Phurah, thy servant, down to the host, and thou shalt hear what they say, and afterward shall thine hands be strengthened to go down unto the host. Then went he down with Phurah his servant unto the outside of the armed men that were in the host. And the Midianites and the Amalekites and all the children of the east lay along in the valley like grasshoppers for multitude, and their camels were without number as the sand by the seaside for multitude. And when Gideon was come, behold, there was a man that told a dream unto his fellow, and said, behold, I dreamed a dream, and lo, a cake of barley bread tumbled into the host of Midian, and came unto a tent, and smote it that it fell, and overturned it that the tent lay along, knocked the tent down. And his fellow answered and said, this is nothing else save the sword of Gideon the son of Joash, a man of Israel, for unto his hand hath God delivered Midian and all the host. And it was so, when Gideon heard the telling of the dream and the interpretation thereof, that he worshipped and returned unto the host of Israel and said, arise, for the Lord hath delivered into your hand the host of Midian. Isn't that cool? I mean, he did the fleece thing, and God did that at Gideon's request, but this really clinched it for him. More so than the fleece. This was God's idea, and this is something God engineered. He had one guy have a dream that God gave him, and these are the unbelievers. These are Midianites, not Israelites. But he gave a dream to one, and he gave the interpretation of the dream to another. As Gideon is listening in secret, overhears this. The words that God gave had a greater impact than the physical thing of the fleece. You see? The words of God will always do it. The signs that people see, they can say, oh, that is cool. But the words, once Gideon heard these words, he'd said to the other 300, get up, God's going to do this thing. He knew it. He had no doubt. At this point, he could not believe it. It's like manifestation of believing. He could not believe it at this point. He could only believe. He had no more fear. No doubt. And he divided the 300 men into three companies, and he put a trumpet in every man's hand with empty pitchers and lamps within the pitchers. And he said unto them, look on me and do likewise. And behold, when I come to the outside of the camp, it shall be that as I do, so shall ye do. Follow the leader. When I blow with the trumpet, I and all that are with me, then blow ye the trumpets also on every side of all the camp, and say, the sword of the Lord and of Gideon. So Gideon and the 100 men that were with him came into the outside of the camp in the beginning of the middle watch. That's when they have the changing of the guards. Everyone's asleep except the guards, and the last shift went to bed, and a new shift, they've just gotten up, a little groggy maybe, but it's time for them to guard the camp, okay? That's the watch. It's not something you wear on your wrist. And the three companies blew the trumpets and brake the pitchers and held the lamps or the torches that were in their hands and the trumpets in their right hands to blow withal. And they cried, the sword of the Lord and of Gideon. Now, in the middle of the night, when there's no other activity, 300 men shouting, that's going to be pretty loud. And all around the camp, 300 torches and 300 trumpets blowing at one time. That's going to startle everybody that's sound asleep and the guards that just took over. But God knows what he's doing here. And remember that one guy had the dream and they knew what it meant. And they stood every man in his place round about the camp, and all the host ran and cried and fled. The whole big army panicked. And the 300 blew the trumpets, and the Lord set every man's sword against his fellow. So it's dark, it's night, and everyone's like, we're being attacked, and they're fighting against the guys that are right next to them. They're fighting against their own men. And of course, there's Midianites and Amalekites that are strangers too, and they're all together. So they're fighting against each other and killing each other. So we're in verse 22. We'll read that again. The 300 blew the trumpets, and the Lord set every man's sword against his fellow, even throughout all the host, and the host fled to Bethshitta and Zererath, and to the border of Abel-Meholah unto Tabbath. And the men of Israel gathered themselves together out of Naphtali, and out of Asher, and out of all Manasseh, and pursued after the Midianites. The ones that were told to go home, they came back, and they started chasing these guys. And Gideon sent messengers throughout all Mount Ephraim, saying, come down against the Midianites, and take before them the waters unto Beth-barah and Jordan. Then all the men of Ephraim gathered themselves together, and took the waters unto Beth-barah and Jordan. And they took two princes of the Midianites, Oreb and Zeeb, and they slew Oreb upon the rock Oreb, and Zeeb they slew at the winepress of Zeeb. I think they probably named those places after. And they pursued Midian and brought the heads of Oreb and Zeeb to Gideon on the other side of Jordan. So there's a little bit more, but that's all I wanted to read this morning to show that if someone wants to do the will of God, and God had chosen this man and given him instructions and given him responsibility and put his spirit upon him, that he still needed some help from God. He didn't ask God for these signs to test God. He didn't do it because he wanted an out. Like, oh, if it doesn't happen, I'm just going to stay home. But he wanted God to help him. And he did that. But God did more than he asked for. Because the real clincher was not the physical things. The real clincher for him was the dream that God gave to one man and the interpretation he gave to the other when they didn't think anybody else was listening. And when Gideon heard that, he just absolutely knew. He said, there's no way. It's not a physical thing. It's words. God works with words. He can do the physical stuff, but he communicates to his people by way of words. Words will help you more than the things that happen, more than the things that you feel, okay? The words of God will penetrate into your heart and will build you up and give you that confidence and that strength to do whatever it is God has you to do, okay? If you need help, ask God for words. Ask God to help you, but be ready to receive words. Okay? That's going to be the thing that kicks the fear in the butt. All right? So God, we thank you for how great you are, and we thank you for how mighty you are and the wonderful things that you can do. But most of all, we thank you for your words. We know that says that you've magnified your word above all your name. And it's by your words that we were saved. It's by your words that we believed, that we have become righteous before you, that we know that we have eternal life. It's through your words that we have the hope of the things that will happen in the future. It's through your words that we have all your great promises, and we can see your mighty, mighty things that you do when we believe your words. And we thank you for Jesus Christ, who fulfilled your word, obeyed your word completely and according to your word, gave his life as a sacrifice and rose from the dead. So we thank you for your words, for your goodness, for your mighty power. In Jesus Christ's name, amen.